This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, in for John Hockenberry today. Thank you so much for listening. And let's go back to last December when the Senate Intelligence Committee released a report on one of the biggest controversies in the Bush administration. That report condemned the administration's torture of terrorist suspects after 9/11 and claimed that federal officials had repeatedly lied about the practice. Vice President Dick Cheney continued to defend the administration's use of so-called enhanced interrogation techniques, appearing on Meet the Press just after that report was released.
All of the techniques that were authorized by the president were, in effect, blessed by the Justice Department opinion that we could go forward to those without, in fact, committing torture.
The Senate report also confirmed that some American psychologists had worked with the administration, giving the CIA and the FBI a mental health carte blanche on torture tactics. Reporter James Risen wrote about these psychologists in his recent book, Pay Any Price. On this show, he told John Hockenberry what he found.
After Abu Ghraib and after the scandal broke, a lot of American psychologists were very worried about what was going to come out about their role in providing support to the torture program.
Well, now a new report finds that it wasn't just a few mental health professionals, a few psychologists who worked with the Bush administration at black sites around the world helping with torture techniques. Instead, the entire American Psychological Association is implicated. According to three researchers, the American Psychological Association, or the APA, secretly advised the CIA and the FBI on torture tactics and even changed its own ethics code to help the administration justify its use of torture. With us is one of the authors of that report. Dr. Stephen Risner is a clinical psychologist and a founding member of the Coalition for an Ethical Psychology. Dr. Risner, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
What you're alleging here essentially is, as James Risen said, after Abu Ghraib and the exposure to the world that prisoners were being subject to abuse, that people in the government and in the public and in the press started asking a lot of questions and putting interrogation under scrutiny. The enhanced interrogation program was under threat. And so the CIA turned to sympathetic people within the American Psychological Association basically for ethical cover. Is that about right?
I would say that that is about right. The timing bears that out.
How did that work?
Well, the Justice Department always required that there be health professionals present at the interrogations, what we would call torture interrogations, in order to give ethical and legal cover, in order to make the case that this was not torture. It didn't cause lasting and severe harm. But after Abu Ghraib, there was such an uproar that George Tenet, the head of the CIA, resigned. And the day after he resigned, he sent in his resignation. He insisted that the Bush administration reauthorize the program, that they relook at it. Why? At that time, it turns out that there was all kinds of pushback at the CIA from the Office of Medical Services and from the Inspector General questioning whether these tactics violated international law on torture, cruel, inhumane, and degrading treatment. Just at that time, a group of psychologists from the APA, from the CIA, from the Department of Defense put together a secret meeting to discuss the ethical questions about doing these interrogations. And a process began that it culminated in the APA changing its ethics policy to completely comport with what the CIA and the Bush administration needed in order to continue that program, and the program was continued.
And how do you know that this happened? What's your evidence?
Well, our evidence comes from a collection of emails among a group of psychologists and national security researchers. This collection of emails fell into the hands of James Risen, who then gave us access to those emails to analyze. And it was mostly a group of emails between a White House psychologist, a high CIA operational research psychologist, this psychologist from the RAND Corporation, and the director of science policy at the APA.
And then how did this task force within the American Psychological Association change its ethics code to say that a psychologist, a member who has ethical responsibilities, that person who participated in this program would still be on solid ethical ground? What contortions, if you will, did they have to go through to this place?
There were a couple of major contortions. The one that happened at that time had primarily to do with research and monitoring. The Bradbury memos, which were classified at the time, they came out as a reauthorization of the program, required observation and research on detainees to validate the notion that these were not going to cause lasting and severe harm. They needed to have the health professionals doing experimentation, basically, using prisoners. And that has been prohibited since the Nuremberg trials. The APA put together this task force, and at that task force, the language of research on detainees was changed. The interesting thing is that according to the emails, this language was, and I quote the emails, crafted by the psychologist who had been working at the White House, who was part of this group. She was secretly present at the task force meeting and apparently wrote a part of the APA policy that then permitted psychologists to do what the CIA and the Bush administration needed health professionals to do. What they did was they said that psychologists can be responsible for monitoring the amount of pain and distress, for researching the significant or insignificant harms. While these things are happening, psychologists can be present guiding those enhanced interrogations. They basically changed the ethics policy that all health professionals are required to follow, which is do no harm, to let's determine how much harm we can do.
Now, we have to ask about the converse here, because the converse view on this is that if Vice President Dick Cheney and others have repeatedly said that it's not torture to participate in waterboarding and enhanced interrogation, sleep deprivation, all of the other things we now know about, one conclusion could be that he's saying that because the experts have told him so. And if the experts say this isn't torture or that ethically sound psychologists can participate in this, that his conclusions are sound based on what he's been told.
Yes, except that always in our history, in the history of the United States, depends on who's doing the waterboarding. When others have done it, we considered it torture. When the Bush administration decided that for their purposes they were going to waterboard, they worked with the Justice Department to construct a very, very legally weak argument saying it was not torture. It was not about whether it caused lasting or severe harm. It was whether the interrogators, the torturers, even the ones who ordered it, I would say the vice president and the principals group, it was a matter of whether they could say they had health professionals present so they could be indemnified. We all know, and we knew at the time, that this was causing severe and lasting harm. The research has shown that psychological torture techniques cause much more lasting harm than even physical torture techniques. So that's not the question. The question was that the American Psychological Association joined with the Bush administration to create a rationale to protect and indemnify those who were doing these enhanced interrogation techniques. Not that it actually was not torture. I don't think anybody except Dick Cheney would question whether this was torture.
Now, in terms of your profession, psychology, people have called you a dissident, and maybe you are, but you're a member of the APA, correct?
Yes. I'm a member of the APA. I'm actually on the Council of Representatives of the APA. I'm a part of APA governance.
Governing body.
Yes.
What does this mean for the credibility of your organization then?
Well, I think that really depends on how the organization responds to all of this new information. There is currently an ongoing independent investigation aside from our investigation that was created by the APA in response to Risen's book to investigate the extent of the collusion between the APA and the CIA. The issue is, how is the APA, now that this information is coming out, now that we're getting the facts clearly about what happened within the association in collusion with the Bush administration, how is the organization going to make itself accountable, be transparent, make changes, acknowledge what happened, and put in place new policy that, first of all, stop psychologists from being involved in any of these individual interrogations for national security purposes. And second of all, changes the culture of APA where so many secret dealings seem to be going on. The organization needs a thorough self-examination and some pretty serious change.
Stephen Reisner, a clinical psychologist and a founding member of the Coalition for an Ethical Psychology. Dr. Reisner, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
We did reach out to the American Psychological Association for a comment on this story. They told our partner, the New York Times, that the organization never coordinated with the Bush administration. And they told us, and I'm quoting, "We are not commenting on any allegations about the APA's support for the CIA torture program at this time," end quote. They did say an outside attorney is looking into the allegations and that once the review is complete, they will make it public in its entirety. To see their full statement, you can head to our website at thetakeaway.org.
This is Ira Flatto, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.